Hello, this is The Lake Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com in channel Pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
Hey, it's The Linux Show. It's Tuesday night. It's Election Day in California. It's October the 7th, 2003. And on this California Election Day, we're celebrating another episode of The Linux Show, Tuesday night edition, brought to you every week at this time, thanks to our supporters, you folks out there listening to the show, who out of the kindness of your heart, go to that PayPal link and either make contributions, or those of you who register a domain, that domain kicks a couple of bucks, not a lot of money, but every couple of bucks helps. We do remarkably well with the people out there that are just registering a domain. So if you're looking to help out, join the family, join the community of Linux Show listeners. That's a great way to get started, is to help support us. And while you're doing it, also tell a bunch of your friends all about the show and to come join us every Tuesday night, both listening to the show and in the IRC room. We can see that the IRC is a little slimmer than normal tonight, although people are joining up quickly. I see that in about the last 5 seconds, we've had about 8 people join in. But expect things to be a little slow tonight for the first half hour of the show with the election going on in California. But, people will hook up eventually. We got most of the panel already called in. We probably will not have Doc joining us tonight. He might call in a little later. Doc had a friend pass away this afternoon, and so he's a little busy dealing with the shock of reality of a close friend passing away. So our best goes out to Doc Searles and his entire family and all their friends and relations to deal with another death in the Searles community. So, but he'll be back next week. You can count on Doc. He bounces back quickly. So let's go ahead and jump on into the show, bring everybody on the panel in. Out on the far, we'll say the West Coast. I won't say the left coast tonight because I know things are political enough already in California tonight, Arnie. So how you doing tonight, Arnie?
I'm pretty good. As I said earlier, I was a little sick this morning and I didn't get to go to school, but so my students had to suffer with substitutes today, but I'm doing all right.
Poor kids.
Poor kids. They probably learned a lot more. But, you know, things, I went out and voted, and the lines were pretty good. And we had punch cards on the last election, and today we had Mark Sense, which is sure a heck of a lot better, I'll tell you right now.
You had what kind?
Mark Sense. Mark, take a pen and fill in an arrow.
It's that simple, huh?
Very simple, and a nice thing is there's a nice audit trail with a paper ballot if they have to recount or anything like that.
So no hanging chads in your area, huh?
No hanging chads in Ontario, no. Actually, San Bernardino County in California. The largest county in the whole nation goes all the way from L.A. suburbs all the way to the border with Arizona.
Yeah.
Pretty big county. They're doing pretty good with that. I like that. I think they ought to keep that. Heck with the machines.
Just plain old paper and pen, huh?
Well, I mean, they can read them with a computer, and that would be fast.
Are they the scanner cards?
Yeah. Well, it was all those candidates on there, Larry Flint and everybody, you know, Gary Coleman and Arnold and everybody, you know, they had to have a pretty big ballot.
Hey, what about the guy who wants to make ferrets legal? That's the one I was...
Yeah, there's another guy, a cigarette retailer is his occupation, you know. And there's an entertainer with a female name, one name.
Yeah, isn't she the adult industry woman? She's basically a porno performer.
Well, there's another one. There's a porno adult porno movie star as well. And then, of course, you got Larry Flint. So you choose your flavor, and you have a vote here in California.
That's a fact. Yeah, it takes all kinds in the mysterious West out California way. That's for sure. So, are you getting any sense out there as to how things are going? I mean, I saw here on the news about an hour ago that they're talking about exit polls. But, you know, the exit polls, what happened the last time we had big exit polls? They guessed wrong three times. But the exit polls are talking about, they're talking about Arnold has already won this thing.
Well, I mean, you know, I tell every exit pollster lies every single time. I mean, I am never truthful to an exit pollster and never will be truthful to an exit pollster. I deliberately deceive them.
Well, that sounds like fun. I mean,
it is fun. I try to, you know, I told, you know, if I would have been asked today, I would have told them I would have, I don't know. There's another guy named Robert Dole. Bob Dole.
Really?
Yep.
That's interesting. What party is he running?
I think he's an independent.
Well, with all the porno stars and stuff, I guess he got a lot of independents.
Yeah, well, those are dependents instead of independents, yeah.
I see.
The cigarette retailer, he's probably dependent, too.
Yeah, it's amazing when you've got a situation where, what did it take? 65 signatures and $2,500?
Yeah, $3,500.
$3,500?
Yeah.
So I still say we should have put up the money for Doc.
Doc, yes, from Santa Barbara. Yeah, Doc would have been, that would have been a good one. Of course, you know, of course, with nearly the number one blog in the universe, he might have gotten some votes.
I think he would have done well. Might not have won, but I think he would have done well. Would have had to have done as good as a porno movie actress. At least I would hope.
Well, with all the candidates here, I figure it this way. You know, I really hope that everybody just spreads the vote around a lot. And so what will end up happening is they'll count all the ballots and they'll realize, and there'll be write-ins too, and that everybody will all get, everybody, the whole mess of candidates will each get one vote. Yeah, then I'll serve them right for foisting this idiocy on us.
Well, then you get to have a runoff.
A runoff, yeah. Well, you know.
Do it all over again.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Now, Arnie, what you just said isn't totally fair. You said what they foisted on us.
I mean, you know, look, have you seen this ballot?
You guys foisted it on yourselves.
Well, I don't know about that.
I think that you passed.
Yeah, that's not a very good one, is it?
Well, who's to blame? You know, there's apparently, 18 different versions of recall initiatives across the nation,
mm-hmm.
And California's the only one that is quite this easy to get on the ballot?
I think that the recall law is fairly old, too. It's not a new thing.
But California's always had this bizarre independent streak. And so, you know, this is just...
Well, it's partially settled by the Earp brothers, you know?
Uh-huh. This is par for the course in California.
They settled in San Bernardino.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I know Wyatt Earp was a consultant on cowboy movies back around the 1910s, 1920s.
Yeah.
You know that? Yep.
That was before Gunsmoke.
Yeah, long before. Well, what's going on over to Russ? Hi, Russ. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, we're hanging in, or at least faking it. Weather's good here on the East Coast. We're not going to the voting booths today, which means that we can actually get work done. By and large, things are just kind of puttering along.
Well, there's no work getting done here in the Chicago area tonight with the Cubs playing.
Oh.
Things are like...
God love the Cubbies.
The Cubs pretty much ground things to a halt this afternoon. Businesses were shutting down early. I went to my daughter's volleyball game this afternoon, and there was a noticeable attendance drop come 6 o'clock. But, I got to understand it in Chicago here. This is a 95-year bad luck streak that is about to be broken, or theoretically might be broken. We'll see. I'm not holding my breath, frankly. It'd be really sweet if they did it, but we have, in Chicago, we've been burned so many times that it's hard to stick one's neck out too far. But the people on the north side of Chicago have gone crazy. That's a fact. So why don't we go ahead and just jump on in to the first segment, seeing as we've gotten the craziness about both the Cubs and the election of whoever in California out of the way. So let's go ahead and jump on into the first segment. Russ, why don't you jump in and give us some story?
Okay, well, tonight my big one has to be the goings-on over at securityfocus.com, where there was a piece published a couple of pub days ago. I guess actually it was almost a week ago now, by Scott Graneman on Linux versus Windows viruses. And then there was a return fire, I guess Monday, a rebuttal from viruses, what are they called, virusbulletin.com. And links to both of those, by the way, are on the Linux Show website, so you can find them there. It's one of these things that we're going to see a whole lot more of as we get on with things. The guy on Security Focus makes some excellent points about the differentiation between Linux and Windows when it comes to virus vulnerability. The fellow over at Virus Bulletin also highlights some things that are not altogether inaccurate. The problem here, I think, is trying to balance out the facts to get a proper view of the deal. And I think the guy at Virus Bulletin is kind of missing a couple of things in his analysis.
Well, I think they were both correct. I read both articles as they were being published, and they both have some very, very valid things to say. However, you really have to, after you experience the kind of things like what happened a couple of weeks ago with some of the viruses that were just sweeping the Windows world so badly, it's really hard to focus in on these dire predictions of, Linux is secure right now, but it is vulnerable. It is vulnerable. Well, everything is vulnerable. And things need to be done to make it less vulnerable. But, let's focus in on the reality. The reality is that just a couple of weeks ago, we had the largest virus infestation in history, and it didn't happen to Linux. It happened to Windows. It's just that simple. Could it happen to Linux? Absolutely it could. There's inherent obvious reasons why it probably won't, or if it does, it probably won't last very long. But I think both articles were very valid in many of the points they were trying to make.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, and I, those two are on my list too this week, and they're both good articles, and they both have valid points. I think that his article is aimed at a bit at Microsoft, and geez, why do you have this operating system like this? type of plea, and so I think that maybe to some extent the two guys are aiming at different targets. But Pete Sargent, who wrote the other article in Virus Bulletin, has some good points. But I mean, some of them aren't real important. Like for instance, he claims that the Graneman article claims that Linux users don't generally run as administrator as root, and without root privileges, you're not going to be able to do much damage. And Sargent responds that, geez, data is what's important in your home directory is even though you're not root. If you're not root, your home directory is still available, and that's where your important stuff is, and that's a valid point. And the other thing he says that some people still run as root.
Well, yeah, to add another little anecdote to that, it doesn't happen very often, but there's never been a time where I have lost a root password where I haven't found some local exploit to get root from a regular usual user account.
Yeah, but we're not talking about local problems.
Well,
I don't worry half as much about local exploits. In fact, I don't worry hardly at all about local exploits. I fix them when there's a patch, when there's a patch to remote exploits that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, but if somebody does make a problem in, say, a mail program that does give someone access to somebody's user account, they could then probably fairly easily get root.
That's true.
Hello, everybody. Eric Raymond here.
Hi, Eric.
Hey, Eric. The other thing about the rebuttal that that I have some issues with, yeah, he makes a lot of statements of fact that are not... that are pretty much online. The problem, though, is that his individual facts don't necessarily line up to being a rebuttal. He talks about, numerous Linux email programs have had exploits, and this is true. The thing that he doesn't discuss, however, is that there is a huge difference in a network situation between having numerous different exploits in numerous different mail agents and having a single exploit on one widespread mail agent. The whole deal about viruses is not whether or not a virus can exist. Sure, a virus can exist. How much damage can it do? And when you have a monoculture, a network monoculture, where virulent strain shows up and it wipes out the entire community, which is what we are getting from time to time in the last few years, that is orders of magnitude worse than having multiple exploits, but that can only affect a small percentage of the existing sites.
There's another difference which we should not be shy about pointing out.
Eric Raymond.
Yeah. I actually maintain a mail transport program, as some of you know.
Mm.
And one of the big security-related differences between my mail transport program and a lot of the popular closed-source ones is that I've had things show up in my code. I've been alerted to things that were potential remote exploits in my code twice. In both cases, I had a fix deployed within 48 hours.
That's typical.
We can do
instead
that.
Instead of 48 months.
Yeah, instead of 48 months. We can do that. The closed source vendors typically cannot.
Well, I think the whole issue revolves around that because of the culture of Windows, it just is so damn easy to write a virus that does enormous damage. And it, because of the culture of the open source community, it is not easy to write a virus is going to do a lot of damage.
You're talking about the virus vulnerability article, aren't you?
Yeah.
I had my own reaction to that one. I'm working up a design which I probably won't publish, but I decided that it would be an interesting exercise to try and build a propagation algorithm for a superworm that would create a mutually reinforcing network of viruses. So even if you brought down three quarters of the machines in the network, they'd just reinfect each other and rebuild the network. It's not hard. It's not hard. Under some very general assumptions about the rate at which you can infect machines out there on the internet, you could build a security plague that could not be wiped out by any means short of a nuclear war. It wouldn't be very difficult.
Yeah, I've actually heard of that suggested by a number of people hypothetically.
I'm now contemplating whether I should publish this design or not.
or just let go on the world.
No, I don't actually want to write the program. The argument against publishing it is that someone might do it.
Right.
The argument for publishing it is it might frighten people enough to get some motion. And the long-term argument for publishing it is, well, someone might do it, And if someone is going to do it, maybe it's better that it happens sooner than later.
Get it over with.
So I'm divided in my mind about what to do about this.
Well, I have to say that the notion of frightening people into action, I think, is a non-starter, because it would in the open source community. When you're talking about the open source community, you talk about frightening people into action. That's a possibility. But you're talking about frightening corporations into action when you get into the closed source frame.
Mm-hmm.
And my observations thus far are that it doesn't happen as well as it should.
I don't know. I found fear pretty effective.
Yeah, but
fear for future profit margins.
Fear for future profit margins, but provided that you can get the attention of the right people and deliver it as more than hypothetical.
Now, the last couple of viruses that have swept the Windows users, if that doesn't wake up an enterprise, you know, VP of IT, you know what? Nothing's gonna.
Yep, that's about it.
Nothing's gonna short of somebody dropping the box right on his head.
I think that's actually the wrong way to think about it. What we're seeing is actually an exponential curve of cost impact. Each major outbreak is worse than the last.
Yep.
So if there is any threshold at all at which these people experience enough pain to move, we are going to reach it. It's only a question of when.
Yeah, well, I would think so. I would have thought any one of the last two would have been enough to tip the scales.
And how do you know it hasn't
happened? Tipping point.
Huh?
The tipping point.
Yes. And how do you know that hasn't happened? Even if we reached the tipping point 3 weeks ago, it's not likely that we'll have visible indications of it for another 90 days.
Or maybe even another 2 years.
Mm.
Yeah.
The way corporate buying goes, it could be 2 years before.
Yeah.
Well, at least you figure what is well, I don't know, 2 years in what I'm selling is obsolete in this industry. So I don't think 2 years is too little long.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody plans on that long cycle anymore.
Well, the problem I think, Eric, with the assumption about finding that tipping point is exactly what you see inside the Virus Bulletin article, where there's a couple slap shots about the wetware. The persistent belief here is that it's all people's fault. The problem is you've got stupid users, and since you're not going to get rid of your stupid users, you're going to be stuck with the problem. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's just one good point.
It's your people. You got stupid people, and that fallacy, I think, is. I mean, yeah, you do have to educate your people, but you know, you don't leave loaded guns around just in the hopes that no one picks one up and blows someone's head off. You know, you have to do something to secure the things that can do damage and keep them away from hands that shouldn't be reaching for triggers.
Hmm. Yep. Interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that angle before.
Yeah, but he does have a fairly good point on that, because if we have stupid Linux users, viruses could get a foothold, and we probably do, undoubtedly do have stupid Linux users, just like we have stupid Microsoft users.
Yeah, well, we're probably entering that era right now with all of the enterprises that are starting to stick Linux on clerical machines. We should start seeing some of that kind of results in the next 12 months or so. The stupid factor. How are we going to label that variable?
Well, the thing is, though, I think at least, you know, some people complain about ease of use and whatnot with Linux, and I think what it comes down to is that there are certain features which are still not available because they should not be available yet. You know, the thing that I never see people address is the fact that this whole nonsense with Outlook got started when Microsoft decided to implement groupware functionality without paying the price for groupware authentication. And that is that you could send someone an executable and trust that sender and go ahead and execute it and not have to worry about it. That whole notion of authenticating the user in that context was never even explored that I can find, and it was a dumb move.
And they still have it that way.
And you know, yeah, they got a few safeguards floating around, but it's still the same basic thing. And you know, the reason why you're not seeing that inside Linux is because we don't have that infrastructure set up to handle that problem yet. But you know, the guy in the Virus Bulletin says, you know, it's not too much of a stretch to say that users were demanding these things. Well, in some respects, when it comes to a corporate situation, I don't care. They can demand all they want. When it comes to a corporate IT world, you do what's best for the corporation. You do what's best for the network. You don't worry about the fact that Johnny wants a different colored screensaver than all the rest of them. You know, tough, live with it. And so when you have a horribly insecure architecture being thrown at you, or you lose a rather minor benefit of executing other people's programs on the fly, then, you know, the only intelligent thing to do is say, scrap the benefit, it ain't worth it. When we solve the problem of making it safe, then we'll look at it again.
Yeah, I had a boss at a former job of mine 20 years ago, and everything he couldn't understand was suspect. And this guy wasn't real bright.
Yeah, do you have pointy hair?
Well, I mean, no, but he had there been a Dilbert at that time, he would have been a good model for the pointy-haired boss.
Yeah.
And I wrote him a memo explaining why the most important software in his company was going to blow up in the field if he shipped it without making a certain documented bug fix, which I documented quite well. And he took and read the memo and said, I don't like the way it's worded, and threw it in the basket and ignored it. And we spent the next 2 weeks fixing the software that was in the largest retailer in the whole outfit. While they were crashing all over, things were crashing all over. And face it, some of these people that are making decisions don't have the wherewithal to make intelligent, informed decisions.
Well, did you send him a follow-up memo? I told you so.
No, that would have been like throwing gasoline on a fire.
I'm good at throwing gasoline on fire.
Yeah, you don't want to. In this case, situation, you wouldn't have done it either. But you know, I was satisfied with the fact that we were able to get it working just the way I said we would. But it was unfortunate that we had trouble in this field then. Oh well.
Well, Eric's joined us. Eric, I'm presuming, and maybe I shouldn't presume, but I'm presuming you joined us because of your posting on the possible fall of Sun.
Pretty much. I figured, considering you were going to cover that, you'd probably want me to comment on it.
Well, I'm glad you came by. I hate to ask you every single week to come by, but what the heck, you called up, so great. Thanks for coming. And sure, why don't you about this? It's pretty hard for an awful lot of people in the investment community to all of a sudden have to swallow the stuff that was coming out, like right at the end of last week and early this week, about the dire things that the people on, you know, the big pundits on Wall Street were saying about Sun. But why don't you give us your take on it?
Actually, you bring up an interesting point, which actually I think the most interesting thing about this whole sequence of events is that I'm not alone. It's that some fairly heavy-duty characters on Wall Street are essentially echoing a lot of the things I was saying in my essay, which is that Sun doesn't have a direction. They don't seem to have a strategy. Their revenues are dropping. Their stock price is it's ridiculous. And what I think I've seen recently is investor confidence breaking. That's a financial thing. That's a psychological thing, not a financial one. But it's a very important thing. I've been there when a promising company went down the tubes. I was on the board at VA Linux. And the result is, well, unfortunately, I know what death smells like, and I'm smelling death. Now, an interesting consequence of this, by the way, is I got a call from somebody who apparently is the executive assistant for somebody named John Fowler, who's supposed to be the software chief technical officer at Sun, and he wanted to talk to me. And that was going to happen 4 o'clock Friday, but he can't. I got email canceling at the last minute, so I don't know if that conversation's ever going to happen. Presumably, he wants to persuade me that I'm wrong, which is an interesting datum in itself.
Yeah, well, the piling on of people in Wall Street over the course of late last week and early this week, it really caused people's mouths to drop. Because, I mean, Sun was a, you know, big player in the dot-com explosion. I mean, Polaris has been a mainstay of the Unix community for years.
Yeah. And by the way, in case it's not clear, I hope I'm wrong. I would be delighted to be wrong.
Yeah, well, what do you think of well, before I say what do you think of, now you say you smell death. That's a real pretty simplistic comment that people may not be able to relate to. What specifics are you cueing in on as you smell this whiff of death?
Well, one of the biggies was Moody downgrading Sun's securities basically down to, like, junk status.
Yeah.
And then there was an article by Reuters in which analysts for a couple of the big Wall Street investment houses came as close as they ever come to saying, get out of this stock now. In practice, they never actually do this because they've learned that if they ever say anything like that about a company, the company stops returning their phone calls and they can't ever get information again. So there's kind of ritual dance where the analysts say hold when they mean sell, and banking people only admit when they think that a company is doomed.
Is this McNeely's fault?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it in those terms. I tend to think more in terms of structural problems with the kind of business that Sun is in.
Yeah, but Sun has always been a bit of a cult of personality.
Yeah? How do you mean that?
McNeely. Everything, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the way Sun has been organized to follow the apocrypha of McNeely, just like what's going on over at Apple with Jobs. I mean, they have very similar cultures within the company with the people within the company have absolute belief in McNeely, at least until very recently, I should say.
I wasn't actually aware of this.
You don't think so?
It might very well be true. I'm saying I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah, well, coming from my ISP hat, if I put my ISP hat on, it took a lot during the late 90s for ISPs to step away from Solaris and into Linux.
I know one of the ones that did it.
It really did take a lot.
Yeah.
Because ISPs loved that company and loved the product. And so the people in-house, the developers, were extremely loyal and have stuck around until very, very recently. I mean, it wasn't until the last week or two that I started hearing word leaking out that the development teams were turning in their notice.
Development teams at Sun, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I made a few phone calls after I started to get the idea something was badly wrong here, and I heard the same thing, talent bailing out.
Yep, that's what I have heard. And that really, I don't know, I just have to look back at the things that Scott has done over the last couple of years that have almost seemed at times to scuttle things that could have been really big for that company. I mean, you know, Java has just sort of like festered. for years. It's never really quite gotten there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really, it's been weird to watch because there's every reason it should have gotten there.
Yeah, it's great programming tools.
Yeah.
Great language. Had its problems, but it should have been
far better than it did.
Yeah, far more well received by the overall industry. It just never got there. And I don't know. I have my personal beliefs on some of the games that were played early on in the Java days, but I don't know. Interesting commentary though that you did post out there, and also it takes a lot of courage to say that kind of stuff about a big business. When a big business is right on the edge, it's not easy to say things like that because you've gone through that situation with VA yourself. And
yeah.
You know how
it's very painful.
And damaging the media can be to you. You know, the things that are said in the media. But the facts are the facts. Bad companies should die and just leave their source code behind for the rest of us to recover in archaeological digs.
that's a good point, Jeff, because you were just mentioning that Java isn't where it probably should be or could be. And I'm wondering how much that's attributable to the fact that they aren't open, that it isn't open.
Well,
I wonder if opening Java would help.
I think it's too late for it to help now. I think it might have helped 3 years ago.
But still there's a lot of Java out there. Lots.
Well, okay, the thing is, I think opening Java could make the language more of a strategic success than it has been. The thing is, at this point, I think that's too late to help Sun.
Yeah, it is too late
to
help Sun. And in fact, it might be deemed as an actionable action because if they end up in bankruptcy court, things like Java are going to become assets.
Right.
That are going to be battled over by lawyers. And if, you know, in this 11th hour, obviously Sun will exist in some form into the future. It's not going to completely go away. There's far too many Solaris servers out there for the company to just, boom, close and go away. It's going to exist in some form. But it's very, very likely at this point that somebody's going to acquire Sun. With the stock dropping as rapidly as it is, you know,
please not SCO.
No, SCO.
Oh no, they don't have the money for it.
this is an HP or IBM play, one of the two.
Microsoft.
Very unlikely. How would buying Sun fit into Microsoft's business plan?
I have no idea.
Unless they wanted to totally kill Java.
Oh,
well, I mean,
from their point of view, they've already
before.
Done that.
Yep. Yeah.
I wonder how much Microsoft's behind-the-scenes plays when they first got into Java had to do with Sun's...
It hurt, but I think that Sun's present position is Sun's fault, not Microsoft's.
Yeah, we can't blame Microsoft for this one, as much fun as that might be.
I always thought that Sun was just too resistant to change. I mean... They seem to, okay, this has worked in the past, so why don't we just keep on doing it until it doesn't work anymore? Because, they had plenty of opportunity a few years ago when Linux was just coming up and coming to get someplace where they
had the opportunity, Ernie, to see the exact same vision that IBM saw.
Right.
Yeah,
and they passed it by. They were in the exact same position. There is nothing that Linux favors better.
Unfortunately,
than a big server, big iron type of manufacturer, and Sun could have really benefited from Linux. And
with Java,
Unfortunately,
and
I
with Java, that would have
just
been really good. Because Linux does Java real well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can tell you why they missed that chance, and it wasn't Scott McNeely's fault.
Okay, well, whose fault was it?
Bill Joy.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, yeah.
I was actually there in 1998, I think it was, when Bill Joy came to a Linux conference and tried to sell a bunch of Linux community leaders. I was sort of a real fledgling newbie one at the time. He tried to sell a bunch of Linux community leaders on Genie. And Linus Torvalds was there. And Bill went into his rap. And I said to Bill Joy at the time, look, you have a fundamental choice to make here. You can have control or you can have ubiquity, but you can't have both. And he more or less lost it and started flaming, and Linus Torvalds walked out on him.
Yep. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And so I do want to retract the statement I made earlier about it being all Scott McNeely's fault. No, it's probably only 75% his fault. And Joy does his history of screwing up things. Yeah, you're right.
Now it may be that what it's possible that what Bill Joy did was give sort of a technologist permission to McNeely to do what his instincts would have told him to do anyway. but be that as it may, I know because I was there that at least part of the blame is on Bill Joy. And
think of this going back to the mid '90s. I mean, Flowers owns the internet. Back in the mid-90s. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's a lot of BSD out there, too. But there was a predominance of Solaris servers sitting in ISPs across the U.S. Okay, there just was.
Yeah.
Any ISP with any self-respect, at least, had a couple of Sun servers sitting in their network room.
You were an ISP, you were a Solaris shop.
Right. You just were. And that's just the way it was. And in the mid-90s, when Linux really started to start performing well, Linux web servers started to pop up in limited uses within ISP server rooms about 95-96 time frame, Sun really had the opportunity at that time, if they had the vision IBM had, if they would have embraced Linux on Intel at that time, and provided ISPs with a development path to go from Linux on Intel up to Linux on Sun, and then maybe even Solaris on Sun or some kind of hybrid mixture of the two, they'd be sitting right now where IBM is.
Yeah,
they absolutely
that's true.
Would be. And they owned that market, and they ended up giving it away.
Jeff, does Nate Friedman mean anything to you? The ISP, the big ISP guy who ran one of the pioneers out of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
He's an old buddy of mine, and I watched him go through this Sun to Intel transition, and he resisted it for a long time. He used to deride Intel boxes as being unreliable crap that he wouldn't have in his server rooms, but he got with the program. And he is one of the people who, if Sun had done the right thing at the right time, would have helped them absolutely cement their dominance of that market.
Yep. I concur. I completely do. I think it was just a very, very sad missed opportunity for them that probably is going to cause the ultimate demise of Sun as we know it today.
And as I said in my essay, I'm not happy about that.
While we got you on the phone, Eric, before you disappear into the Netherlands, I do have one more story that's on our story list for tonight that I'd like to get your comments on. I'm presuming you've read it, and that is the open letter from SGI to the Linux community on their analysis of the source code.
Did you know they used my software for that?
Yes, they didn't say so.
Say that publicly.
What's that?
You're not supposed to say that publicly.
No, they said it publicly.
It is public information.
They said it publicly.
Oh.
But do you have a legitimate Unix 5 license?
It's been public knowledge that I have System 5 release 4 sources for about a month now, Jeff.
Yeah, I know it's been public knowledge, but do you actually have a license?
I do not.
You're taking a big risk, dude.
Well, yeah, in a technical legal sense, perhaps I am. However, I know who the only people are who have any standing to prosecute me on that one, and they're not going to.
You're sure?
Novell.
Oh. Oh, okay. So, yeah, okay, I get it now.
Well, Sko could always try it.
But Sko couldn't sue him. They would have to sue Novell.
No, that's not true. I suppose there are some strained constructions of the law under which Sko could sue me. However, if they do so, they're going to find out what happens when you launch a speech suppression lawsuit against someone engaging in investigative journalism.
Yeah.
It doesn't tend to be pretty.
Yep. But, no, so, well, comment on the alert, because I thought SGI, their report, was brilliant.
I thought it was good.
As far as I'm concerned, presuming that SGI is telling the truth, and why in the world would they lie? There's no motivation for them to lie.
No, there isn't.
And so presuming that, as far as I'm concerned, this issue is now over. It is absolutely over.
Well, I wish I could be that sanguine. The trouble is, courts have a long history of rendering crazy verdicts, so we have to keep on top of SCO's crap.
Oh, sure. There's no question. But we now have a definitive comment from somebody who has actually analyzed the code line by line by line and has totally debunked the million lines of code myth that Sko has been trying to propagate for the
last. Look, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but no, this doesn't prove that. And the reason this doesn't prove that is because IRIX is based on a version of Unix that's too old to be definitive in this context. What you really want is for somebody to do a comparison against the actual Unixware sources, or failing that, at the very least, System 5 release 4.2 with the ESMT code and the Intel Unix port. As far as I'm aware, nobody's done that yet.
And does anybody have source on those?
No, I'm working on it.
It's amazing how all these historical Unixes have just completely disappeared. That's spooky. We need to have somebody like Peter Salas be appointed the archivist for all this crap.
There is an outfit called the Unix Historical Society. It's run by Warren Toomey.
Really?
They do things like this. And they, in fact, have source code archives for a lot of the really old PDP-11-like Unixes from the 80s.
Uh-huh.
All on 8-inch 256K diskettes.
Oh, well, not anymore. but, in fact, this was the guy. Toomey was the guy who supplied SCO. When SCO decided to open source System 3, Toomey had to supply them with the source tree for System 3 because they couldn't find it.
Yep. Yep, I remember that. Now that you mention that. Well, what kind of an impact do you think that this is going to have on the people in... say the mainstream IT community, it just seems like every time news of any kind comes out about Sko, negative or positive, the stock is just constantly going up based upon crazy rumor. But I've got to feel that as this SGI evidence comes out into the mainstream... And
Jeff. You know better than to expect sanity from the courts, and you're expecting sanity from the stock market?
I expect more sanity from courts or from stock market than I do from court.
Well, in general, that's fair, but...
That's for damn sure. When they can find O.J. Simpson innocent, you know anything can happen in the courts. That's for sure. It's impossible to predict. So, well, cool. Glad you came by to comment. Feel free to hang out. We're gonna, going through our list of stories. But Kevin, it is 8:51, so why don't we take a 5-minute break and get ourselves reorganized and come back on the other side of the break with segment number 2 of the Linux Show. Everybody hang out, kick back and relax, and listen to a tune, and we'll be right back. Hang in there.
And she's the sea, and she bleeds from every dawn to every dusk of every day. If she is the boat and he is the breath that fills the gale, the crest and fall, and thrust and throw, the bill on the sail. If he is the sextant, she is the stars by which he guides. From sombering sea to port at every even tide. If she is the gull and he is the sanguine song she cries, a wistful wordless question rolls to sea and sky. If he is the house and calm and she's a summer storm that drowns him in her furious skin, the hungry, wild, and warm. The ripples in the deep blue wide places of our hearts, tumbling in the deep blue wide places of our hearts. Every ocean has its depths that we could never hope to chart. It is here that we have anchored every secret of our hearts. If he is the stream and she is the tale, his babbling tones, the dream of every desert, every empty well. If she is the cliffs and he is the waves that shatter here, steal away the stone and hopes of creeping near. From you the days impossible we understand, but this doesn't stop the sea and shore from lingering in the sand. The wonder of the current, the winding of the eel, where the storm of the sirens call, the song of soul sailors reel, to the whisper of the tide. Far below the ebb and flow, so deep within reach of love, where only love can go. The recent wrecks were all measured in time. Ripples in the deep blue quiet places of our hearts, tumbling in the deep blue quiet places of our hearts. Every ocean has its depths that we could never hope to chart. It is here that we have anchored every secret of our hearts. Vanishing breath, they enter the waves, for only the drowned can be saved. The weight of their trust shall carry them swift, so deep below the ebb and flow, and their hearts start gray.
And we're back.
That's the Linux Show, and we do have some breaking news for all those people listening around the world to us. It looks like there is a record vote turnout in the state of California. The early results say that as many as 10 million people might have voted. That's 30% more than the people who elected Davis in the 02 election. And this is by far, a record, a smashing previous record for a non-presidential year vote turnout. So in a way, this is cool news because California, the people got out and spoke, but it's going to go down in history as one of the most unusual elections because it looks like, Arnie, you have a governor by the name of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Arnold.
The gubernator.
The gropinator.
Well, you know, if nothing else, this is going to make for some interesting news coverage for the next couple of years. Or at least until they do a recall vote on Schwarzenegger.
At which point he'll say, I'll be back.
I was flashing through the TV the other night, and I saw a bunch of people for Davis. They apparently have already got money budgeted that if Schwarzenegger was to win this election, they're going to wait for the first thing he does wrong and immediately launch a vote recall.
You know when I knew he was going to win? I saw a color photo earlier today from a rally, a Schwarzenegger for Governor rally, at which he was playing electric guitar while D.D. Snyder, the lead singer from Twisted Sister, sang his campaign anthem. And the background was this, like the perfect multiracial crowd. It looked like something from a UN brochure. And that's when it was when I saw him with the guitar in his hands that I knew he was going to win.
Well,
you can't lose in California with a picture like that.
Yeah, CNN still does not have any results posted, but NBC and some of the other websites have already got results posted. And of course, this is all based upon exit polls because the polls just closed, or let's see, they're closing this minute in a lot of parts of California. Right this second, polls are closing.
But it will make some political difference if Schwarzenegger's vote is above 50%, because then his opponents aren't going to be able to claim he's the minority governor.
Yeah, well, I suppose no matter what, I mean, this is going to go.
I think someone ought to fund a recall immediately, and then whoever gets in that vote, fund another recall. And keep on funding recalls until they change the recall law.
I think they ought to fund a recall and then elect nobody governor. Just leave the position vacant for 4 years.
Well, I mean, that's in effect what California has done today.
No, that's actually not true. Davis has done a great deal more damage than no governor would have.
Well, no, but like I say, what they've done today is elect no governor.
We'll see.
A totally ineffectual government is generally the best thing that can happen to the public.
Yes.
That's I'm sorry. I'm not an anarchist. I can't go along with it. But
no, let's be honest about this.
Hey, rat hole. This is not a political talk show.
Oh, well, we can have fun with it, though.
That's right. Okay, let's get back on topic. Eric's spoiling our fun. Okay, Ross, we left off with you talking about your stories when Eric joined us. I know you have one or two more.
Oh, I just have one more, and it has nothing to do with whether or not Herbert Hoover was our greatest president. There's a story out on the Linux Show webpage on SUSE launching a $449 small and medium-sized server offering in November. And Jeff during the break and said that he found this a little underwhelming, and I, you know, to some extent I agree. The interesting thing for me about this, number one, is that you know, it's good to see a vendor going after particular niches. But number two is a line that appears near the bottom of the article, and it's, quote, however, most vendors acknowledge that most of the Linux action is on the enterprise side, close quote. And how far we have come, you know, that 18 months ago when you mentioned Linux in the enterprise, you got disbelieving stares, and of course this was a small business play. That's the only thing that made sense around Linux. And now they're saying, well, of course it's an enterprise play. Why would you run small businesses this way? It's an amazing reversal, despite the fact that I know lots of small businesses that live and breathe on a Linux backbone. So I think whomever wrote this particular line should do a little bit more research. But it is interesting that the impression has changed that dramatically in such a short period of time.
You know what I think we're actually seeing here is vendor wishful thinking. The vendors want Linux to be an enterprise story because there's more money there if it is.
Yeah.
Yep. I just want to pass a message along to Kevin. People are getting bumped off the IRC. There's a lot of traffic on the IRC, so you may want to take a quick look at it. Okay, get back into what you were talking about, Russ.
Oh, I'm pretty much done with that. Thank you.
Well, okay. Well, I'm going to pick up on your comment then, because I really was semi-underwhelmed by this announcement. I agree with you. I think it's very cool that we're seeing the pundits being shown that people are going into niche specialties. I mean, really, that's what commoditization is all about. Commoditization breeds specialization, and that's what the closed source people don't get about open source is that it's going to hurt a couple of companies like Microsoft, but it's going to really open up a plethora of a couple of million new business opportunities for millions of other new businesses that don't even exist yet. And niches is the first place where that kind of stuff shows up. So I'm glad to see SUSE come out with this product, but I really am a little underwhelmed after they made their big effort to change their name last week. That I would have thought that their first product out of the gate would have been something a little bit more earth-shaking than what it has, but it's okay. I don't want to pick on them too hard.
Well, isn't SUSE one of SUSE is one of the main distributors for IBM stuff? Yeah. They're using Red Hat and SUSE, aren't they?
And Turbo Linux.
And so they might be targeting that kind of stuff. IBM.
Don't know. But I tell you, when I first saw the announcement, when I saw the $499 price tag, I really thought that they were releasing an appliance, not just a software license. So I was a little bit sort of surprised because, I have my beliefs when it comes to the hardware associated with this. I'm looking for Red Hat. One of these days, Red Hat's going to start popping out with appliances. That's my prediction of the month, so to speak. But that's all your stories, Russ?
That's it for me.
Okay, Arnie, how about you?
Well, I got a couple. There's one of the headliners in InfoWorld this week, and the Dead Tree edition is Linux Grabs Slice of Cell Operating System Pi, and subtitled Open Source OS Banks on Multiple Network Capabilities. And apparently the number one supplier of platform software for cell phones is moving their platform to Linux. And this is big news.
That is big news.
And let's see, it's OpenWare's software runs approximately half of all currently shipping data-capable cell phones. And the V7 version will act as render and graphics layer that applies to Open Mobile Alliance standards for small devices to Monta Vista Linux. Motorola, and NEC have since announced they will each manufacture handsets using MontaVista Linux and OpenWave V7.
Yep.
That is a big one,
yep.
Because here you spoke about niches. Here's another niche.
Yeah. Well,
and
it's a niche play.
And listen, every big Linux move I've seen in the last several years has been niche plays. I mean, that's where the innovation's happening.
That's what commoditization of anything does,
yeah,
to the overall economy. I mean, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom out in the economy right now, but just you wait. Leave the United States economy alone, and people will invent new things to sell to suckers. There's just no question about it. So I see a very healthy future for Linux and the rest of the IT community as operating systems become commoditized and we get companies like Microsoft out of the way, slowing everybody else down.
Well, I mean, you know, look at Microsoft is trying to get into these niches too, but the thing is they can't respond as quickly as an open source community can because when you have lots of little companies doing lots of new, different things, the chances are good that there's already some kind of solution available. What's interesting about this article is how the new consortium of embedded Linux companies is going to play into this.
Response speed is only half the problem.
Well, yeah, but that helps prime the pump.
Yeah. The other half is, have you read The Innovator's Dilemma?
Yeah.
You remember Clayton Christensen's notion of how differing cost networks are associated with differing technologies? The response speed is only half the problem. The other half of the problem is Microsoft has costs baked into its network that are so high that they're out of the reach of the people who are building these niche applications.
That's right. Also they have big costs, and also Microsoft tends to be slow. I mean, they don't get up to speed very quickly. When they try to change directions or go to into something new, it always takes them so long to get started. Now, look at how long it took them to catch onto the web. You know, if it hadn't been there for their illegal marketing, they might not have ever got a hold of that.
Well, let's be fair. It wasn't illegal at the time.
Well.
It was found to be illegal at a later date.
That's right.
This at press time. Lawrence Lessig has a new article just posted. It's from dated October 1st, but it's the first time I've seen it. It's called Open Source Closed Minds. It's on Ziff Davis CIO Insight, and I think it's on Slashdot now, so you can get a link. On Slashdot, is that where I saw it?
Well, Arnie, how about the all the articles coming out about Forrester? I mean, I thought you'd be all over that.
Forrester?
Yeah.
I try to avoid Forrester. There's an almost guaranteed clueless pundit of the week.
But you got to acknowledge it, Arnie, that, you know, and maybe it's about time, you know, it took them forever, but at least they finally admitted that they have been doing it wrong in accepting money from Microsoft to run, you know, tests that then Microsoft at a later date convolutes the results of the reports to their best marketing purposes.
They say that they're no longer going to publish marketing as.
And they admitted it today. I'm okay. So you gotta give the devil their due when they admit to misdeeds.
Oh, I mean, it kind of puts suspect on cats everything they've published in the past in great, great suspect. So, you know, what are you going to do?
Yep. Any more stories?
I just have one clueless pundit-type article, Why Open Source May Be Doomed, by Megan McArdle.
I invited Megan on the show tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And she was too busy to make it, and so I'm leaving the invitation open to another night.
I have an angle on that story.
Hmm.
I'm actually sort of distantly friendly with her. We're not close, but we read each other's blogs, and we've had dealings before. And I sent her a polite email, unlike some of the flaming she's been getting from Linux advocates, and said, look, you've got your facts wrong. SCO's going to get crushed. And she sent me back. Well, we had an email exchange about it, and the upshot is next time she feels like writing about open source, she's going to check her facts with me first.
You know, it's funny. Every single article, and there's been a slew of them, this is why I kind of did, I'm not really, there's so many articles about the SCO thing, and like last week's InfoWorld had this great big spiel on SCO and Linux, and our great friend Rob Enderle is putting his money 6-4 on SCO. Go ahead, Rob.
What a twerp. Boy,
yeah.
I wish I could get him to make that bet in money, I'd clean up.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go to Las Vegas and take the money.
Well, frankly, guys, I think that's why SCO's stock is doing well. Because there is a truism in the PR game, and this is at least for the short term as it relates to stock prices, that if you say a falsehood enough times, long enough, with enough passion in your voice, pretty soon people will believe it.
That's Goebbels. That's right out of Goebbels' mouth.
Big lie theory, yeah.
That's Goebbels' theory.
It doesn't matter how much of a lie it is, if you say it enough times, with enough passion, people will eventually believe you. And some of the people in the media have heard this line, like Megan, because I also contacted Megan, and that's why I invited her on the show, because her article was so unbelievably clueless that I had to think to myself, you know, if she checked these facts at all, she would be embarrassed if she knew how far off.
No, she should be embarrassed. It was a very, very clueless article.
Yeah, and so that's why I wrote her. I said, you know, you can't seriously tell me that you checked these facts. You just wrote what was in the press releases from SCO, didn't you? And she basically...
I'm sure she had a lot of other input,
yeah.
But it's...
But, no, I think she just has learned an unfortunate lesson that part of the game, part of the publishing game, and that is you can't get away with repeating pap from PR people like Blake Stowell from SCO. Because I can't believe how many articles I've seen in the last month and a half that have quoted Blake Stowell from SCO as some sort of an expert on one issue or another, and the guy is a PR guy. That's what he does for a job. And people are quoting him like he's some sort of technologist or legal expert, and he's a PR guy. I mean, that's all he is. It's funny. It's embarrassing. I feel so embarrassed for some of these reporters who don't realize what they're doing. But, Goebbels was right. So,
indeed he was.
Any more stories, Ernie?
That's it.
Okay, well, we are up to 9:15 already here in Chicago. Kevin, do you have any product releases you want to get in? I'll hold the rest of my stories for next week's show.
One note. A little over a week ago, Yahoo changed the protocol on their instant messaging program to Well, nobody knows why, but it broke all of the third-party clients, so there's now a new version of Game out that does work with it. So still my favorite instant messaging client, so go
check it out. So it broke Gabber and everybody else?
Yep.
Interesting thing for the SEC to look into.
Yeah, actually, Jabber just came out with a new transport for Yahoo as well.
Yep. Yes, they did. Well, I tell you, we've got lots of other interesting stories that I'd like to talk about tonight, but we'll have to hold them off till next week. Really, I'm trying to get my hands on one of these Linux CDs that converts an Athlon into the ultimate game console. I'm looking forward to getting a whack at that. Also, some interesting news coming out of Sharp. It looks like, I don't have actual documents in my hand, but it certainly looks like, based upon the news coming out of Japan, that the next generation Zaris is going to be made in an English language version very, very shortly. Sharp was real happy with the the mileage they've gotten out of the first couple of Zaruses being pretty much constantly sold out of every retailer in the United States. And so,
when are they ever going to come out with a client that'll let you sync it with a Linux desktop again?
Don't know. Well,
that's what networking's for.
Yeah.
It does networking over USB. Just do it.
Just plug it in and believe.
It's Linux.
Just believe. It'll work. So, on behalf of all panel here at the Linux Show, I'd like to thank you all for listening. Thanks to the, let me look at my ledger. There's been a total of about 68 people who have stopped by the IRC this evening. That's a pretty good-sized crowd. So thank you all for stopping by. Tell your friends about the Linux Show, the longest-running and most popular Linux webcast in the world. Take pride in that, and we're going to continue broadcasting to you every week on Tuesday nights as long as you continue to support us. Check out our website at www.linuxshow.com. We've got a couple of things where you can participate. Join our list. I encourage you to join the list, get all the news, join the conversation during the week. Make a contribution to the Linux Show family, I should say. Or if you work for a company that's involved in the IT business, then donate a little bit of money. We'll take donations. We're not too proud. And, in fact, I'd like to plug one of our sponsors, the folks at linuxquestions.org. Go to linuxquestions.org and leave a message for Jeremy and tell him that you heard about linuxquestions.org on the Linux Show. Great bunch of people out there. There's 35,000 people participating in the linuxquestions.org community. So thanks to all of them for taking a little money into the coffers. We'll be back same time next week. See you then, everybody. Till then, we are out of here.